Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on out there? James Bostic with a conservative's perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do that at blogtalkradio.com, and then you can just go to the Patriot Nation Radio Network studios, and you can find the show. We got a couple of different things going on here. Mark Hoffman is our wingman on that, and the Patriot Nation Network is his baby. And it, you know what? It's been so long now, I'm not really sure when it was. I'm thinking it was probably... We're either starting our fourth year, which I think we are. I think that's what it is. We were at another network a long time ago, and that's where we met. I was I've kind of always been on my own when it comes to my radio program. I was affiliated with the Red State Talk Radio Network. That was some great stuff with Primo Mondone and the hosts and the programming over there, and that was really terrific. Primo was a great guy. Then after he passed away, the vision kind of left that organization, and I just didn't really get any positive vibes off the guy that took it over, and I wanted to do something else. And there were some other great people at Red State at that time. And it was through their talents and their vision that the Talk America, well, first it was Red Nation Rising, and then it morphed into the Talk America radio network. And that's Donna Fiducia, former Fox News, prototype Fox News. Definitely a babe. I don't want to say info babe, because that would be demeaning, and I don't mean it like that at all, because she's an outstanding person, and her husband, Don Newen, a terrific guy. They have Cowboy Logic Radio, which is a terrific show, and you can find that on the Talk America Radio Network. And people like Don and Donna and Ron Phillips and Rocky Stucci and Gene Berardelli, all these awesome people that I've been so privileged to be in contact with. And so now I'm doing the Talk America thing. And we do this live. We do this live two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. And it's awesome to be here with you. Thanks so much for the opportunity to hang out for a little while. You know, on the blurb, I said there was just so much going on. I have no idea where to start, and we'll look at as much as we can. Starting tonight at 7, here we are. And there has been a lot of stuff. I mean, there's just, you know, they talk now about the immediacy and the urgency. You know, those two words are kind of interchangeable, but the immediacy of this 24-hour news cycle and the urgency of all the news, everything's got to be compelling or you're not going to watch. And if you don't watch, and here's the thing, let me tell you this, and I'm going to go into this briefly and I'm going to touch on something else. What I'm going to talk about is carriage fees. I know, how many of you out there just don't watch CNN? You don't like them? You're ideologically opposed to everything they do. You've seen how they treated the president. You don't like it. It's rubbed you the wrong way. And you probably weren't watching them for a long time before that. So you're not watching them now. And you would not be moved to watch them. And the reasoning behind this is I do not want to contribute to anything that would generate revenue for CNN. And that is laudable. That is admirable. And I understand it. And I don't watch it either. I have no use for any of the alphabet numbers. As a matter of fact, I don't have cable at all. I have an internet service, which I get through, who's a provider here? Charter. No, Suddenlink. Yeah, Suddenlink is the internet cats around here. And I pay a ridiculous 70-some bucks a month. And I know that there are places out there that are paying more, and I think that's ridiculous too. You know, high-speed internet shouldn't cost a guy any more than 35, 45 bucks a month. Incidentally, I'm the same way about tennis shoes. A good, simple pair of white leather sneakers shouldn't cost a guy any more than about 45, 50 bucks. A nice pair. And if you know where to look, you can get them for that. But back to what I was talking about. So you don't watch CNN. You don't watch MSNBC. You don't watch ABC, CBS, PBS. But you don't watch any of them. Well, there's this thing called carriage fees. And carriage fees are built into your telecable bill. On a good night, and I'm not making this up, you can go check it out. John Nolte, I think, at Breitbart did something about this, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. Whoops, knocked over the vitamins because I'm old. On an average night, a good night, for CNN, a really, really good night, maybe 1 million people. That's right. That's it. 1 million people. The hosts themselves, some of them draw about 500,000, maybe 800,000, 0.75 million. You know, they don't, you know. Now, here's the thing, and this is the thing about the news business in general. Certainly television, definitely radio. It's easier in radio, too. It's about appearance. They look like they're a big league news network. They've been around for 1 million years. 1 million people on a good night. Now, you're probably scratching your head. Well, how do they afford all these weird hosts that they have? Well, that's where we come back to what I was talking about earlier with this carriage fee. Now, this carriage fee is a fee that's tacked on to your telecable bill. And it subsidizes unpopular channels, unpopular networks. ESPN gets some. CNN gets some, MSNBC gets some. And so with the carriage fees, and not just one telecable provider, all telecable providers do this. You most of the time you don't even know you're paying for it. Or you recognize it, but you want cable more than you want to bitch about a carriage fee. So what do you do? Well, you know what you do. You pay it. You still don't watch CNN. You've turned off ESPN. You don't watch MSNBC for the same reason. They're all clowns. but they're still getting your money. They're still getting your money. What can you do about it? Well, you can do what I did. Cut the cord, man. Cut the cord. There's a lot of alternatives out there, and we're not going to get into that. But the reason I'm talking about that is, actually, I kind of lost track of the reason why I was talking about that. But these networks that we think are big deals really aren't. A million people. How many people in America? 200 million? 300 million? 63 million people alone voted for Donald Trump in the election, and for probably by and large still support him. You know, sometimes when I say I have no idea where to start, or I'll post, you know, random neural firings because I don't want to talk about, that's not true. I usually know what to talk about. I may say that and sell it that way, but I usually have some kind of framework. But tonight there's just been so much crap going on. John Bolton has replaced that idiot H.R. McMaster's as National Security Advisor for the president. This is a very, very, very good thing. Andrew McCabe held a pity party over the week. You know, week before last, on a Friday document dump, he was Twitter-fired by the president. Now, that may sound cold and cruel and all that, but the thing is, a couple of days beforehand, McCabe was given a heads up saying, you know, you're probably, if you're not out and out fired, you're probably going to be asked to step down. And, you know, if they ask you, I think you should. But if they don't ask you, you're going to get fired. That's why they're not going to ask you. They've decided to just go ahead and fire you rather than ask you to tender a resignation. Not dead air. I'm here. So McCabe, no, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about that. This is the big story. This was a big story a week ago, and it's building up to be an even bigger story, I think. So we're going to go with this. Last week, let me check the date on this. Okay, the 23rd, so that would have been 4 days ago. Can't 4 days ago. Anyway, what it comes down to, I got this article from American Thinker, and it's written by a guy named Thomas Lifson. Mr. Lifson is, as best I can figure, the man behind this website. I've been reading from this website. I've been drinking from this well for a long time now. Water's clear. Water's good. It has its own nuances of flavors. But it's not dirty. It's not polluted. And you're getting good stuff when you get it. What he says is this, and I am inclined to agree, and he makes the case, and I'm going to link over to a couple different things. We are fundamentally, and I've been saying this for a while, we are on the verge of a huge political explosion. There have been calls for a special counsel to investigate the DOJ and the FBI scandals, and many conservatives have been outraged with what appears to be the passivity of Attorney General Sessions. It's now clear, and if you've been paying attention to this stuff, you know this, it's now clear that a grand jury far outside the D.C. Beltway is already, perhaps even as we speak, hearing evidence that was discovered by the Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz, who's the report was supposed to be out this month, middle of the month. Well, now we're down to the end of the month. They're saying sometime in April, but we don't know when. But I promise you, as soon as it arrives, we're going to get our hands on it, and we're going to break it down, and we're going to be talking a lot about it because this is a big deal. This is a very big deal. Because following the release of Inspector General Horowitz's report, you may expect heads to explode all over the media, the deep state, and the Never Trumps. Now, I know these are sensational statements, and they, you know, they're really provocative. But here's the deal: the first hint that we have that the wheels of justice are already turning on this issue came back on March 7th when Attorney General Sessions was being interviewed by Shannon Bream, Fox, I think. And he says this, he says, I have appointed a person outside of Washington many, many years in the Department of Justice to look at all the allegations that the House Judiciary Committee members have sent to us, and we are conducting that investigation. When a federal prosecutor digs into an investigation, a grand jury is impaneled to issue subpoenas and to hear testimony. Now, a couple days back, I think it was the 22nd, this came out on what, the 24th, 23rd, which was, I think, a Saturday, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, so Robert Goodlatte, who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, sent a subpoena to the Department of Justice because he was wanting some information. And the response that the Department of Justice sent back to respond to Robert Goodlatte's subpoena, there was a letter, a response letter from a man named Michael Bromwich, and he was the attorney who represented – oh, he's still representing. Wait a minute. Am I even on the right story? What in the hell? Okay. I'm sorry. First things first, March 7th, Jeff Sessions is being interviewed by Shannon Bream, and he says – I've got somebody that I've got looking into this. There's somebody from outside the Beltway. They're an old hand in the Justice Department. They're looking at all the things that we've received from the House Judiciary Committee members. And so fundamentally, yes, we are conducting that investigation that the committee members have requested. Now, when a federal prosecutor conducts an investigation, something else happens, and what that is a grand jury is impaneled to issue subpoenas and to hear testimony. Now, Bob Goodlatte, he's a Republican from Virginia, is as chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, he's one of the top three people throughout all of Congress with a comprehensive knowledge of the events surrounding the investigations of the FBI and the DOJ. He is one of only four people outside the Department of Justice who have read the full Department of Justice FISA application that was used for the Title I surveillance against Carter Page. So he subpoenas the information that the Department of Justice has on this. And here is what the Justice Department had to say in their response concerning the Judiciary Committee subpoenas. We are individually reviewing the remaining documents to ensure that they do not include grand jury information, information about ongoing law enforcement actions involving American citizens, or privileged attorney-client communications. So what are they saying here? They're saying, all right, Representative Goodlatte, it is our intent to accede, you know, to your request. We're going to answer your subpoena. But in order for us to do that, we've got to review these documents that you're requesting to see that they don't include grand jury information. Why? Well, that would be because a grand jury has been impaneled. information about ongoing law enforcement actions involving American citizens, because Attorney General Sessions himself said, we are conducting that investigation, or privileged attorney-client communications. And my theory on this, we'll get into in a little bit. So if the Department of Justice has to review the demand for evidence because release of those documents without review might conflict with an ongoing jury information, well, then yes, that means that the grand jury, a grand jury, has been impaneled. That also means that there are law enforcement actions currently ongoing as a result of the prosecutor assigned to reviewing the evidence that was discovered by Inspector General Horowitz. This has been going on for a long time, and I know this is not the first program that I have devoted to this. And I know that there are those who take me to task for sometimes being a little repetitive. However, the reason for that, I'm here, not dead air. Kool-Aid. The reason for that, of course, is that if we talk about it just one time and we move on, it's not a big deal. This is huge, and we have to be vigilant. We have to be patient. And our patience is going to be rewarded, really, after the Inspector General's report is published. Now, the federal prosecutor already has the evidence from the Inspector General's report, thanks to the criminal referrals from Michael Horowitz. Why are criminal referrals made? Because the Inspector General believes and can probably point very clearly to the sections and the statutes that were violated, that laws have been broken, that crimes have been committed. And as soon as the Inspector General publishes his report, the prosecutor can begin subpoenaing witnesses. And now we know there's already a grand jury seated somewhere hearing the criminal evidence that they've carved out from the overwhelming Inspector General's evidence as collected. Now, we know a lot of the big names here, don't we? We know about Andrew McCabe, deputy director who got canned because he lacked candor under oath. What's that mean? He lied. He lied under oath. FBI people do not lie. And if they do lie, they get fired. And that's what happened here. And we know about James Comey, former director of the FBI. We know about Christopher Wray, current director of the FBI. We know about Rod Rosenstein, deputy attorney general, who appointed Bob Mueller, another former director of the FBI, and Hillary Clinton fanboy. To the probe against Russian collusion. We've talked a lot about that. This is a little different. There are other names that we've talked about on this program, too. Lisa Page, for example, an FBI and Department of Justice attorney who was carrying on with a guy named Peter Strzok. And Peter Strzok was the FBI agent in charge of the counterintelligence division at the Bureau. A fellow by the name of Bruce Orr, who also worked at the Justice Department as a deputy attorney general. And his wife, Nellie. And Nellie Orr worked at GPS Fusion with Glenn Simpson and Christopher Steele. Now, we haven't heard a whole lot from Lisa Page or Peter Strzok or Bruce and Nellie Orr, especially after the Nunes memo was released. These people have been laying low and they've been keeping quiet. And one of the reasons that they're laying low and keeping quiet, most likely, is that they have struck deals. And this is always how it works. It's just, you know, it's like any racketeering prosecution. These people, although they're high up in the government, for sure, you know, they're not foot soldiers. These guys are like capos. So, you know, they sweat them. They've got plenty on them. We've seen the emails between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. We know the connection between Bruce Orr, his wife Nellie, and the information in that Steele dossier that passed between them. Orr was a contact for Christopher Steele during all this. So, yeah. They've made deals, which will probably explain why they're still on the job and able to draw salaries, even though they may not be working anywhere. James Comey's out in Hollywood looking at picture and book, and he's got a new book coming out. How the hell did he have time to write a book with all this crap going on? Obviously, it was ghosted because he's a no talent dude. Anyway, so he's got this book. He's gonna get. He's gonna make some money. He's gonna do a tour. They'll look at movies or miniseries or whatever. And so he's gonna. He thinks he's gonna become a superstar, and he may. He may. But here's the problem. These people like Lisa Page and Peter Strzok and Bruce Orr don't indiscriminately, without any suggestion from anyone else or on their own initiative, set this thing up. They're carrying out instructions. And where do those instructions come from? Those instructions come from James Comey. They come from Andrew McCabe. They come from Christopher Wray. So they're going to talk. And they're going to implicate these people. They're going to implicate Andrew McCabe. They're going to, well, he already implicated himself with his perjury. They're going to implicate James Comey. They're going to implicate Christopher Wray. They're going to implicate a whole bunch of people who were, you know, Obama embeds, leftovers, sleeper agents, the deep state, for lack of a better term. It's going to blow. It's going to blow huge. It's going to blow massive. It's going to... Oh. It's not going to come all at one time, as we have seen. Now, another thing we can look at, too, if you want to find out what's going on, check out what the FBI is doing in Little Rock, Arkansas. They're interviewing witnesses down there concerning the Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Charities, the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative. All that stuff's headquartered in Little Rock. There's an FBI field office in Little Rock. And those agents are down there. And you know what? Here's the thing. Christopher Wray and Andy McCabe and Jim Comey and Bob Mueller, Sully and stain and disgrace the reputation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. But here's the thing. Those cats out in Little Rock, they're about getting the job done. The people that are looking into these things for this prosecutor that Attorney General Sessions has appointed some months back, same deal. They joined the FBI because, in their minds, this was the premier law enforcement agency, not in the United States, in the world. Every bit as much on the ball as Scotland Yard or Interpol or the Sûreté, or doesn't matter. FBI is it. They're number one. And you still have a lot of men and women in field offices and at the FBI headquarters that believe this. And they're committed to that ideal. They'll get to the truth. And let's pray that they are able to do it unencumbered of this corrupt higher level management leadership that they're suffering under right now. So it's gonna be big. Like I said, it's just throbbing, and then boom, it's gonna go. And some of these cats got to go to jail. This is big. Everybody, you know, they use watermark or water data as the benchmark for this. You know, that's the metric, that's the baseline by which all these Watergate, Schmattergate. It was a second-rate robbery, a burglary. The guys who thought they knew what they were doing, but they got clumsy, they got careless, and they got busted. This is huge. This is treason. What else can you call it when you've got one party active within the government weaponizing departments like the IRS, like the FBI, like the DOJ, so that they can rig an election, a national election, a presidential election? Oh, man, that's not a good look. We're down to the bottom of the hour, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to play a little music. Quite frankly, because I need a break. We'll be back with more of a conservative. It might be a long musical break. I don't know. We'll see what's going on. We'll be back with more of Conservative Perspective right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network after this musical interlude.
Drink to me only, that's all I ask. And I will drink to you. How long I've been on? I don't care if the sun don't shine. I do my drinking in the evening time when I'm in Las Vegas. You can sit in the sun and camp. I get my color from a sunray lamp when I'm in Las Vegas. I love the laughs and love the life. There's fun of every kind. Next time I come, I'll bring my wife. I'll do that if I lose my mind. A wife in Vegas, take my advice. It's like going to China with a sack of rice. But I love Las Vegas. I love Vegas in the summer. I love her in the fall. I love Vegas, may I say that it's a gasser, yeah. I love Vegas like it's Egypt, and I am Nasser. I love Vegas every moment. Ooh, it's my favorite atmosphere. I love Vegas. Why do I love Vegas? Because my money's here. I love Vegas when I'm winning. I love it when I lose. I love Vegas like the army loves its manuals. I love Vegas like Sinatra loves Jack Daniels. I love Vegas every moment. For Mr. Entrada, I must cheer. I love Vegas. Ach du lieber, do I love Vegas? Because my blood is here. I love Vegas when I'm loaded. I love Vegas when I am not. I love Vegas just like Khrushchev loves being indignant. more than even my wife Jeannie loves being pregnant. I love bacon every moment. When I leave, I shed a tear. I love Vegas. I'll make it good and clear. It's because my girl's right here.
Thank you very much.
Ain't got a dime to my name. What a terrible shame. Ho, hum. Ho, ho, hum. Just found a hole in my shoe when my stocking shows through. Ho hum, ho ho hum. I know that when you're as free as a bird in a tree, life is a wonderful whim. Look at the crank with his dough in the bank. Don't you feel sorry for him? Rolling along at a loss, never gathering moss. Ho, hum, ho, 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 hum. Ho, hum, ho, ho, hum. I'm no terrific success, I ought to worry, I guess. Ho, 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 ho. I like a shady old tree, what's the matter with me? Ho, 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 ho. There's nothing quite as grotesque as the man at the desk. Looking outside at the sun. Shirts made of silk and a diet of milk. Maybe he thinks he has fun. I've got the vagabond itch. I guess I'll never get rich. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho.
Let your hair down, Bing. James Bostic here. Conservative perspective. Back on the air after that brief musical interlude. Like I said, you know, there's all this stuff that's been going on. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of hard to get it all. You can't talk about it all. I mean, these guys do three-hour, you know, shows a day. Hannity and Savage and Limbaugh and Wilkow and David Webb and all these and Levin, all these guys. You can't get it all in. And there's plenty for everybody to talk about. So let's talk about it, I guess. So this, again, back to this grand jury. This is big news. This is an important thing. We're not here. Well, obviously we're not hearing about it. The Fox probably doesn't fully understand it, even though they have some pretty decent reporters there who do good work. Shepard Smith and none of these guys are going to be interested in talking about it, and it needs to be talked about it. And we can, another thing too, Pete Schweitzer has a new book out called Secret Empires. And, you know, Pete was the guy responsible for Clinton Cash Incorporated, and we drew heavily from that book. We drew heavily from that book at ACP for a couple of years, and I still say it was the work that Pete Schweitzer did. He's a senior editor at large for Breitbart. I'm convinced that that book and the revelations contained in that book played just as important a role in Hillary Clinton's defeat as James Comey charging, then exonerating, then charging again with new, you know, he screwed everything up for, and I can understand why she hates his guts. But this book played just as important a role. Well, he has a new book out now, and it's called The Secret Empires. And again, it's another, pardon me, it's another, you know, Washington, D.C. expose about the rich and powerful people. And number one, if they're rich and in politics, automatically, you can probably figure somewhere they've been a little bit crooked or a whole lot crooked. A long time ago, Harry Truman said that it was impossible for the honest man to become wealthy in politics. Now, mark what I said. What Harry Truman said. The honest man. It is impossible for the honest man to become wealthy in politics. Orrin Hatch took it one step further and said that it was impossible to go to Washington and return an honest man. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. And a lot of this, again, people talk about the Article 5 Convention and the Counterman Amendments and term limits and all these things. And I'm sure there's merit to all of them. I've looked cursorily at the Counterman Amendment and the Article 5 Convention of the States. And procedurally and theoretically, you know, they sound like they're solid if you can get everybody on board and you can get the machine to work. And that can be tough because everybody's got their own agendas. Everybody's got their own interests. They don't want to see their ox get gored, as Abraham Lincoln would say, in the process of doing this. My friend Scott Kesters and I had talked about this a couple different times, and he's of the same mind that I am. We haven't heard from Scotty Boy in a while. We'll need to check him out, give him a call, see if we can get him on the show, get an update, talk about what he's been doing. But, you know, you have these the Convention of the States, the Article 5 Convention of the States, and this was a remedy that was placed within the Constitution under, of course, Article 5. If you want to change something really bad enough, you want to this is the procedure for doing it. And then there's the Countermand Amendment, and I've talked with people involved with that, but sometimes I'll be honest with you, I'm just like the rest of you guys. I get into the weeds on this sometimes, and it just my eyes glaze over, and I'm like, what? But if you want these cats out of there, if you really want them out of there, then you field another candidate. You like Republicans, but you don't like this particular Republican because he's a squish, because he sold out to teachers, or whatever your problem is. Don't vote for the Democrat, for God's sake. Field another Republican candidate that will more truly represent you and your agendas. They're out there. There are guys that would do it. There are guys that would do it. And I mean competent guys. I don't mean opportunists. I don't mean, you know, you're going to have to vet. You're going to have to pay close attention because these politicians are a shifty bunch. We all know this. Look at Bill Clinton. They didn't call him Slick Willie for nothing. They didn't call him Tricky Dick for nothing. There's a reason for these names. Okay? They're crooks. They're shifty. They're shady. But I know personally, I don't want to be involved in politics. Ick. I like looking at it from a distance and being an armchair quarterback when it comes to it. But, you know, I couldn't – I would have, even if I did have the desire, I am precluded from it because of my past. See, they don't want you having, you know, they don't mind you working on a criminal record once you get in there, but they don't want you having one going in because apparently that's unfair, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, but I wouldn't have any of those desires. Honestly, I wouldn't. But my suggestion is this, okay? And a case in point, there are going to be some Republicans that I'm not going to vote for. I'm going to find other Republicans, and I'm going to talk to my Republican committee members in this county and see why they haven't got another Republican to field to primary this person out. So don't vote for a Democrat to spurn your ideology. Get rid of the Republican. Get rid of the rhino that is spurning your ideology and replace him with someone, like I said, who is going to more faithfully look to your interests as a West Virginian. Okay, and it doesn't matter what, you know, West Virginian like me that works in the school business, like my brother who's a teacher, or like a friend of mine who's a contractor, not a coal company owner, or some coal company lobbyist that comps you to Great Country Club Golf somewhere down south on the weekends and then flies you back up here or whatever. You voted them in other words. Vote them the hell out. But don't vote for a Democrat. Find another Republican that will do your bidding. That's what you want. I just don't see it as that difficult. And a lot of people, you know, they get hung up procedurally on this countermand amendment. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying, well, how about this? Why don't you just try this? You voted the guy in there, vote him out. You don't have to have a convention of the states, for crying out loud, to do that. You don't have to have any kind of countermand amendment. You don't have to meet with anybody. You just walk into the polling booth by yourself. You look at the options. And if you got one, okay, I don't know. Arvon? You're toast. Bostic. I'm voting Bostic this year. And that's how you do it. Not me, some other Bostic. I just couldn't think of another name, so I used some other guy. But you get my meaning. That's how you show them. That's how you hold them accountable. And politicians, they'll see that. See? But it can't be just West Virginia. It can't be just District 3 or whatever. It's got to be all 50 states. It's got to be a concerted effort, just like the 63 million people that voted not for the Republican Party. They didn't vote for what John McCain represented. They didn't vote for what Mitch McConnell represents or Paul Ryan. They voted for Donald Trump and his vision to make America great again. That's all there is to it. And as has been predicted for quite some time, speaking of Donald Trump and foreign policy, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster is leaving his post as President Trump's national security advisor. Former United States Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, will replace General McMaster effective as of April 9th. Much like President Trump, John Bolton is an iconoclast. He will bring a no-holds-barred attitude to his White House position as the president's new national security advisor, taking on dictators, appeasers, globalists, and bureaucrats alike. Mr. Bolton indicated during an interview following the announcement of his appointment that while he will not hold back from offering his candid opinions for the president's consideration, he will also make sure that the president is presented with multiple viewpoints in helping him make key national security decisions. Moreover, he vowed to support whatever the president finally decides to do. Known as an infighter over the years against the foreign policy establishment bureaucracies, Mr. Bolton also said that part of his job will be making sure the bureaucracies get the decision and implement it. As reported by Foreign Policy Magazine, we can expect a massive shakeup at the National Security Council, aiming to remove dozens of current White House officials, starting with holdovers from President Obama's administration. John Bolton shares the president's America First instincts on such key foreign policy issues as North Korea, the Iranian nuclear deal, and entangling globalist institutions. Mr. Bolton will join CIA Director Mike Pompeo, President Trump's choice to succeed Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State, in advocating a more assertive approach to national security. No wonder the left was so apoplectic with rage at the Bolton appointment. Apoplectic. I like that word. I see some dude whose head is overinflated and it's blood red and his eyes are bulging out. Apoplectic. I've made people apoplectic a couple times in my day. I didn't mean to, but I did. It's like a conniption fit. I've never seen a conniption in my life, but apparently when you're infected and you get a fit from one of them, it's a bad thing. The New York Times editorialized on March 24th, for example, that Mr. Bolton was a dangerous pick, as alarming as any Mr. Trump has made. The Times added that there are few people who are more likely to lead the country into war in more than one place. The editorial cited a February 28th op-ed article that Mr. Bolton wrote for the Wall Street Journal entitled "The Legal Case for Striking North Korea First." In this article, John Bolton presented a legal justification, not a policy recommendation, but a legal justification for a preemptive strike against North Korea to counter an imminent threat of a North Korean attack on the U.S. homeland with deliverable nuclear weapons, which they have. John Bolton is a realist who, with good reason, does not trust the word of unstable dictators like Kim Jong-un. However, he's not going to go out of his way to look for war. He told Hugh Hewitt during an interview back in 2007, nobody should want a war on the Korean Peninsula. New York Times also objected that John Bolton had maligned the United Nations and other multilateral conventions, as Mr. Trump has done, favoring unilateral solutions. Mr. Bolton is certainly no fan of those he called the globalists, as opposed to the Americanists, such as himself in an essay titled, "Should We Take Global Governance Seriously?" In that article back in 2000, Mr. Bolton noted quite correctly that global governance would impose costs to the United States, reduced constitutional autonomy for one, impaired popular sovereignty, reduction of our international power, and limitations on our domestic and foreign policy options and solutions. Standing up first and foremost for America's interests is a welcome change from decades of acquiescence to what other countries think, no matter what the cost. While serving as UN ambassador, for example, Mr. Bolton remarked to the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph UK paper, that the UN is like a twilight zone, that things that happen here don't reflect the reality in the rest of the world. He was right. In 2015, Mr. Bolton wrote an opinion column for the Boston Globe in which he said the United Nations is characterized by speeches, meetings, reports, resolutions, and endless ways to spend money. He added that the UN's political decision-making entities, and that would be the Security Council, the General Assembly, and the various human rights organizations, have largely been failures, and he's absolutely right. He also suggested that all U.S. financial support to the UN be treated as voluntary rather than as mandatory assessments, and he's also right there. Former President Barack Obama's disastrous nuclear deal with the Iranian regime is a perfect example of how America's national interests, were sacrificed to the false song of globalism. As a candidate and as president, Mr. Trump has criticized the deal's fundamental flaws and indicated a desire to exit the deal altogether if it couldn't be fixed. Likewise, John Bolton, writing and speaking as a private citizen, has been an implacable foe of the deal from the outset. So here's what's going on. Blah, 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 yakety schmackety. In Mike Pompeo, at Secretary of State, President Trump has somebody who is going to more faithfully execute his foreign policy. With John Bolton as National Security Advisor, he has someone who as well sees eye to eye with the real and present dangers that threaten the United States. President Trump was getting very different advice from key members of his national security and foreign policy team during the first year of his presidency. General McMaster, Rex Tillerson, along with James Mattis, cautioned the president not to exit the Iranian nuclear deal, and the president reluctantly followed their advice. He wasn't happy about it. In January of this year, when the president once again waived reimposition of the sanctions that had been lifted as part of the deal, he warned that it would be the last such waiver unless an agreement were reached to fix the deal to his satisfaction. In the absence of such an agreement, the United States will not again waive sanctions in order to stay in the Iran nuclear deal. And if at any time I judge that such an agreement is not within reach, I will withdraw from the deal immediately. No one should doubt my word. Now, the president clearly is moving in the direction that his own instincts, urged on by John Bolton, are telling him to take. President Trump will have to decide on waiving the sanctions in May with Tillerson and McMaster gone, thank God, and replaced by realists like Pompeo and John Bolton. It's far more likely that the president will make good on his words. Defense Secretary Mattis may still try to persuade the president to stick with the deal backed by the deep state bureaucrats at the State Department and elsewhere in the government. It's also unclear where General John Kelly, the White House Chief of Staff, stands on the issue. However, the fact that President Trump chose to go with John Bolton, no friend of the Washington establishment, as his national security advisor, it speaks volumes as to what the president is likely to do about the Iran deal in May. John Bolton has spent his entire career fighting the globalists in and out of the United States government who are willing to sacrifice America's best interests at the altar of global governance. Fundamentally, Donald Trump's choice of John Bolton reflects American greatness, and that's the best way to look at that. Well, what do you know? That took us right up to the top of the hour. We got about a minute and a half left. ACP is heard here Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Thursdays, thank you, Guinevere. On Thursdays, Mark Hoffman takes over at 8 o'clock and goes from 8 to 9 with the Patriot Nation Radio Live. Always, as a matter of fact, I think coming up here a couple of weeks, Juanita Broderick going to be a guest of Mark's, and you're not going to want to miss that. You know who Juanita Broderick was? She was raped by Bill Clinton in 1978 in Little Rock, Arkansas. That's going to be big. That's going to be a good story. You want to tune into that. You know what? You guys have a terrific evening. I'm just going to go ahead and shut it down here. Thank you so much for the opportunity to get to spend some time with you talking about this stuff. We will see you in a scant 2 days on Thursday, when we'll take a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States. See you then.